People close to the president-elect say that this plan is ambitious and achievable. So he's going to call on Congress to pass nearly $2 trillion in a COVID relief package, which will do a couple of things. One, it calls for raising the federal minimum wage, to $15. It would boost those direct payments to Americans from $600 to $2,000. It also has money in there to safely reopen schools. But the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway here is that Joe Biden is calling for billions of dollars, roughly $200 billion, to create a national vaccine program. And the reason why that matters is because our team is told that the Biden transition only this week, with 6 days to go before he is sworn in as the next president, that the Biden transition team just this week got access to the federal vaccine monitoring program that they use to track the distribution within states. And what they learned is that the Trump administration never really fully invested in an infrastructure to help the states get the vaccines basically from the trucks and into people's arms. And so now the Biden team will be caught having to course correct in real time this vaccination plan. And this, of course, goes back to testing and PPE shortages in the early days of the pandemic, where the Trump administration put all of the onus on the states and gave them none of the help. Well, now Joe Biden is trying to change that, a 180-degree.
A troubling new CDC forecast predicts about 90,000 of our fellow Americans could die of this virus over the next 3 weeks. Let's say that again. While it's good to hear from them, our CDC, the Trump CDC, is predicting we lose 90,000 more souls in just 3 weeks' time. For more, we welcome back Dr. Naheed Bhadelia, an infectious disease physician, medical director of the Special Pathogens Unit up at Boston University School of Medicine. During Ebola, she worked with the WHO back when we were a member nation. We know we have a lot of vaccines in freezers, and we have a lot of people who would do just about anything to get them in their arms. Joe Biden called it a dismal failure thus far. Do you concur?
I do, Brian. We are in the darkest months of this pandemic, and there are parts of our healthcare system that are changing, you know, that are having to compromise care for other patients because of the load of COVID patients. And with the presentation of a lot of the new strains that we've discovered, where the rate of transmission is higher, we're looking down the barrel where we might see even more cases. And so even though this plan is ambitious, it is what we've needed all along. And what I liked about what was revealed tonight in more details, it sounds like may come tomorrow, is that the national vaccination plan that was laid out does three things. It focuses on manufacturing more doses by putting resources behind that production. It ensures that there is distribution through new places where people can get vaccinated. So not just, you know, one or two sites of administration, but mobile vaccination sites, community health centers. And then it works really on equity. You know, we cannot allow now the rollout of these vaccines to play out along the same disparities we've seen everything else in our healthcare system play out along. And so really they've looked at things like supporting the National Guard so they can get out to places, more places to get vaccinations done. They've looked at 100% federally funding Medicaid for the vaccinations, and ensuring that their community health centers and those mobile vaccinations in areas that do not have, you know, large centers such as Boston for care.
First things for Friday, January 15th, David and Charles, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Charles. It's the final Friday of the Trump administration's time in office. And the focus that I want to pick up on those two clips, both of those from MSNBC yesterday in response to our coverage of and in response to Joe Biden's speech announcing his COVID plan, and which is really the beginning of the recovery plan for the country generally. Billions of dollars, increased stimulus payments for the public, all kinds of plans for vaccine distribution, where and when and how. Increased support for states. There's a ton of stuff in there, and I am not by any means qualified to speak about kind of the scope of the policy plans there. I'm pleased that there's a lot there that seems really valuable. My bigger takeaway, where I believe that I do have some insights and we have some insights, is to identify and to recognize the scope of the devastation that we face as a country, that the scope of the work ahead of us on COVID, on education, on climate, on healthcare, on the economy generally, on voting. The scope of the devastation is massive, and it's going to take a national war effort, really, to pull this off. And it's going to take all of us, and none of us are going to be fully satisfied with any pieces of it. But it's going to take all of us to try to move this, to move us to a better place. And the analogy I have in my mind is about 10 years ago, I was traveling in the Midwest and was driving, no surprise there, was driving, and we went through Joplin, Missouri. And Joplin had recently been hit by tornadoes. And the devastation in Joplin was just unfathomable, that everywhere you looked as you drove through it, and this was about 2 months later, as you drove, was destroyed houses, business, there were no businesses in this part of the town. And the scope of it was beyond imaginable, unless you, of course, went through it and were there. And for them, it was not only imaginable, it was profound and real. We have that situation in this country right now. We have the situation where what Trump has done, his unwillingness to work with the Biden administration in any capacity to transition, his complete abrogation, I think is the word I'm looking for, of his responsibilities as a person who leads all Americans and monitors and takes care of our health and so on, is so sizable, so substantial that it can feel overwhelming. It can absolutely feel overwhelming. And at the same time, it is the work of our time. It is the work of our time. Voting is our lane in common power, but the work of it all is the work for all of us. This is frustrating and angering, but it is also stealing. It's stealing in terms of where we are and what we have ahead of us.
You know, that second clip that you played, Brian Williams referenced the unreleased like second half of the vaccine that was just sitting there. And why wouldn't they really release it? And then we learned this morning that when Azar said that they would release the vaccine on Tuesday, or the rest of it on Tuesday, that there is no reserve. There is no reserve. It does not exist. They're literally taking the vaccine off the production line and sending it out to people. I don't even think Azar knew that when he said that. They're either lying or they're stupid. They are the grifting and the malpractice. I don't know if Azar is a Trump stooge, or if he is just somebody who's been working in that department for a long time and moved up the ranks, but it is additional damage to our country that these folks, even if they wanted to, cannot effectively run this government, or could not. And the part of the damage is going to be due to just them not being smart enough to lead our country.
I hadn't heard that statement about Azar, but I just did a quick check on that. And he is a Trump stooge, by the way. He blames the bureaucracy. He blames the government. It's the government's fault. It's like, aren't you the government?
Those people who run that department are terrible. I tell you. They are. So whoever was appointed to be in charge of that, they're the worst. Golly.
Yeah. The the defining characteristic of this is the incompetence. I guess there's two defining characteristics. One is the incompetence, and one is a complete disregard for humanity, for people, for anybody that doesn't fit the Trump portfolio, right? This has been the story of the Trump administration from the beginning, is you're either with him and you do his bidding, and if so, you're in his good graces for a period of time and you get to do what you want, or you're completely disregarded, you're thrown out of the country, you're just dismissed, you're ignored, you're denigrated, you're in these last days of Trump administration, and I know this is a very strong thing I'm about to say, but you're executed. They're killing people on death row right now in this country at rates and ways in which the federal government has not done in decades upon decades. And I look forward to that stopping. This devastation, this damage is so overwhelming that my God, what this is the Great Depression in a broader kind of cultural sense, rather than just an economic sense. It is a great societal depression that we have to deal with.
The Republicans are a death cult. That's clear. And this glee with which they're executing people in these last few weeks is such a sick aspect of their death cult. The other thing is that it's hard to see if these folks, it's hard to witness how little they take this seriously. And, you know, this is a New Deal sort of thing, right? This is a massive thing, as you were saying. This is Katrina and all the other hurricanes and disasters, manifestly harder and harder to deal with. And you need to get people to pay attention. This is back to your point about voting. I mean, the Biden administration is going to have to keep their eye on 2 years from now, because they got to get rid of some of these people, because if they can get anything done, it's going to be a slog. And then you have people like, here's two quick ones. Marco Rubio tweets out, President-elect served in the Senate for over 35 years, so he knows the plan he outlined tonight can't pass quickly, quote unquote, and will delay the $2K for hard-hit Americans. Let's get the extra money to people first. So he's already playing politics with it. And then this whip, I mean, Kevin Brady, he's a Republican Ways and Means, a leadership, an ally of leadership. He goes, here we go again, true to form and his signature, failed stimulus. President-elect Biden launches yet another economic blind buffalo that does nothing to save Main Street businesses, get people back to work, or strengthen our economy. Special interests and liberals are cheering. The jobless and Main Street are left shaking their heads. He wrote this before. He wrote this 2 weeks ago. He probably wrote that tweet 2 months ago because he obviously doesn't care.
He could have written that 4 years ago, 6 years ago. That's the same exact talking point that they use every single time we introduce a new bill. It's played. It's so played out. It would have worked better 6 years ago, actually, because now we see how bullshit their entire approach is. And we see what they actually think about fiscal conservatism.
Yeah, we just got to make sure that his voters in his Texas district and all the other ones have people challenging them with just those words you used, right? Even if they lose, they have to have people challenging them, because these guys are just despicable. Death cult.
Yeah, we need to run candidates everywhere, because as you just said, Steve, even if they lose, they bring an alternative view to the world, and they force the Republicans to fight for their positions and to at some level be a little bit more responsive to the public, because they have opponents. In the state of Washington in 2020, I believe it was the case that the Democratic Party ran candidates in every race, every public election that there was. And it was the first time that the state party had ever achieved this, to actually have candidates in all of these contests. Are many of these going to lose support? But they nonetheless put forward a level of values. They put forward values and energy and commitment that prompts democracy to get closer to happening. as an example of this, you know, we supported a candidate in South Carolina in the 2020 election, Melissa Watson, in the 7th Congressional District. Melissa was a long, long, long shot, okay? But we supported her because of who she was and our commitment to next generation leadership, an African-American single mother who was working like four different jobs and was trying to do something better for that area. She lost by 20 points, but she made a genuine run at the election and she put forward her best efforts and there were volunteers that were working with her. And it was in that district that the South Carolina representative, Tom Rice, voted for impeachment. He's one of the 10 who voted for impeachment this time. And I just think that there's a relationship, whether it's a direct kind of political relationship or more broadly kind of sense of the way in which democracy is supposed to work, that we need to compete everywhere. Now, most of us on this podcast are not going to run for office. But what our contributions can be
most of us. So you or Charles are still thinking about tossing your hat in the ring?
Steve, I thought it was you, Steve.
No. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm hoping, I definitely hope with some of our volunteers, some have already run for office. There are a couple of our folks who have run and won. All right. And we certainly will have some other of our younger folks over time make that move because we need them and they are open to it, not at the second, but down the road perhaps. But more generally, we need to do all that we can. It is not a compartmentalized dimension where we say, okay, we're going to just leave this to so-and-so to take care of this. They're going to fix the economy or they're going to fix our health system. No, it's going to take every one of us in all of our kind of like ways to adopt a mindset that this is a national endeavor. This is as significant as doing the brownouts during World War II at night to conserve energy or to stop using gas. This is what it's going to take for us. And that's just apparent to me now where we are. I'm thrilled that we're almost done, but we still have violence to come. We have a transition to come, and then we have this incredible national recovery ahead of us.
Yeah, we're almost started. Yeah, we're almost starting. That's what this is. Is like that to get over the hump of all the things that have happened in this country and start working on them. It'll take for Biden to become president first. So we haven't even started. I want to talk about how, I mean, we all know how devastating things have been in this country. And I think that's we've lived it. And we've been more aware of it as a voting population. I think that the plan though is one of those, this is like the most positive thing that's come out of the government in years. And it affects so many different areas, much more than people thought. The $15 an hour minimum wage, the grants for small businesses. You talked about the vaccination, the national vaccination program that didn't exist for some reason. He has to build one, $20 billion for that. I read that there's something in here that says you can't pay people with disabilities less than minimum wage either. There's all kinds of like law changes in here too. There are automatic economic triggers that when stuff happens in the economy, like there like other things kick in to keep people afloat. There's so that the breadth of this plan is it's like awe-inspiring because the bars has been dropped so low. Just to see the how many different people and different facets of life are going to be impacted in a positive way. Yes, it's not enough, but it's not enough, and it's still so bold. It is still super bold, and I love how bold it is. This is how you make a deal. You start with the stuff that is really bold, and you start with asking for the sun. and maybe you get the moon, you know, it's one of those things. Hopefully we'll get closer to the sun than that, but this is, you got to ask for everything. And then we'll see what happens. The other thing is that he said he wants this on his desk by the end of the month. This guy becomes president on the 20th. He wants this in less than 2 weeks. He wants this on his desk to sign. That is bold, Joe. That's pretty bold, man. I'm with it. I'm totally with it. Me, I'm with it. Bernie's with it. Let's go. I love it.
I didn't get to hear Bernie. He was on a couple of, he's been on making the rounds. He was positive. He was excited.
I saw a written statement from him, and he's behind it, man. He says it's the first part of a solution. He doesn't think this is it. And I think that, you know, you're going to get people saying this is not enough. You know, it's been proven to be effective in other countries that a monthly check is actually more effective than this lump sum thing. And a monthly check of like something like $2,000 or something, which is super expensive. And also the thing that saves people's lives. So, you know, maybe we've been conditioned to be okay with 4,000 people dying every single day, but you know, everyone's behind it. Everyone's behind this.
Yeah, Bernie was on, Bernie gave the statement you're talking about, Charles, which is a very strong statement. And then he was on the Colbert show last night. And he spoke very positively about this, just as you said, like, this is great. It's a good start. We're going to do a lot more, but I'm fully behind it. But then he also spoke about the gravity of this moment and this situation. And I just feel like we've arrived at this place where the Democratic Party has developed a new way that they're approaching governing, where they're like, we are done trying to even, and this is ironic, because here's Joe, the president, who is the guy who's like, hey, let's get along. But it's like Biden has come to this place where he's been forced to by constituents, leadership constituents in the party, and the gravity of the moment and the horribleness of the Trump administration has all, it's all converged to the Democratic Party saying, we are going to go big. We are going to govern. We won in Georgia. We have now the tools of the Senate, which is a complete game changer. The Senate is, there may be a lot of things that we get to be part of at Common Power over time. There already are lots of wins that we have. We have a great wins page, by the way. Check it out. Charles built it. But getting the victories in Georgia is a complete game changer for this country. Okay. And I just feel like they're ready to, the leadership is ready to govern for the good of the country without sitting there worrying about whether or not Republicans come along. And that, man, that is just heartening to me. That is heartening. If Republicans want to get on this train and do something actually good for this country, let's go. Come on. We're ready, and we'll listen and we'll talk. But if you just want to obstruct, which has been the McConnell model for, no, it was the Gingrich and then the McConnell model, then we've got no time for you. We have literally, our country's dying. We have work to do.
Yeah. I hope that that is the case. I think intellectually that is what we're seeing, but I want to guard against being let down by some more conservative Dem that feels like this is their moment to get something they want or to have the spotlight by holding this up, because it's so easy now, right? All you got to be is one person on our side to stop and pause and make a stand for, you know, financial responsibility, or it's too fast, or it should be bipartisan. You know, we need to, you know, bring the country together to talk. I'm worried that there's going to be one person that does that, and I need to see this happen.
And we're looking at you, Joe Manchin.
I know Joe Manchin is the one. But, you know, Manchin is going to vote to impeach Trump, and he is a huge supporter of health care. And so, Manchin is it's problematic in a lot of ways. But Manchin, you know, he represents, this is not a big defense of him, but it is a statement of reality. He represents the second most Trump state in the country, West Virginia. So Manchin does a lot of good, and he's going to back, he's going to block a few things. But I think that he also, I've seen his comments, and he's not on board for getting rid of the filibuster, which disappoints me. But he's not the only one. There are several Democrats that are not on board for that. He's a problem. But he also is on board for some of the bigger endeavors. John Tester was on MSNBC last night with Rachel Maddow. And Tester is kind of in the Manchin camp, although he's more progressive than that. He's more like a Doug Jones in a red state. And Tester published an op-ed in the Washington Post yesterday. This is what Rachel had him on to talk about. And it was brutal on the Republicans about holding them accountable for this moment and the way in which we go forward, and that we're not interested in just leaving all of this behind in terms of the pain and devastation, that people need to be held accountable. And Tester was just sitting there in his home in Montana. And Tester, I sensed no kind of like patty cake being played by Tester. Let me just say one thing about something you said, Charles. The scope of this, the amount of things in this bill that will do good for people. I just want to use one example that I happen to know about. The minimum wage in this bill would go to $15 an hour. That somewhat washes over us in Seattle because we've seen those dollar amounts and we've experienced them here in town. And we know that that's a commitment that some of the leadership in this state and this city have had, and that many of us have been behind. The minimum wage in Georgia right now is $5.15. Okay. Yeah. So we're talking, that's revolutionary stuff, folks, to get something like that. So I hear you, Charles, in that we're going to be let down. We will. But all we can do is look at like, what's the first effort. And this is the first effort. Right. And I'm pleased and I'm heartened by it.
Yeah. I the $15 minimum wage being a part of this, and it's like a small, it's a small part of this. I was like, wow, this is crazy. I think he realizes that this is the time to push every, like, this is the wish list time. And he remembers what happened in Obama's first years, where they waited on some stuff because they thought that they had more of a mandate, and they used it all up, and then they weren't able to pass anymore after that. They know how this goes. They know that 2 years in, they're going to start to run out of steam, and people are going to start pointing to their legislation as reason why they got to get removed. And so he knows he's got like a year and a half of goodwill, and it starts to decline as soon as he's sworn in. So I think he's going big, and I love every part of it.
Let me I want to begin to close us up here for this episode, but Charles, I'd like to ask you to answer a question that we get sometimes for Common Power, which is, do we take positions on issues other than voting, and do we or do we not on like climate? Do we or do we not? And what's our philosophy around issues generally?
Yeah, I mean, and there with so many things, because this is the thing now, is that is the Democratic Party, do we kind of break apart into our small fiefdoms of issue-based advocacy and fight for our one issue as the top issue? Or maybe we kind of bring everyone together. We say, hey, we're going to represent all of these issues, and let's list all of our issues. It is Common Power's belief, it's our policy, that issues are solved by elected officials who will think about all of them. There are multiple issues that are addressed in this bill. And the way that this bill will become law and those issues will be affected is that elected officials are going to vote and decide to do so. And so what's our policy? How do we believe we best affect climate change and wealth inequality hunger in this country, elect the right people who are going to vote for the right thing. That's how you affect multiple issues, is that you don't list all of them and fight for all the issues. You fight for the people who are going to vote for these issues. That's what we believe. That's our lane. Now, we don't think that people who are doing issue fighting are wrong, in the same way that we don't think that the folks who are marching for Black Lives are wrong. We believe that our part in this equation is to fight for the elected officials who are going to take what those good grassroots groups do and turn it into something more permanent.
By expanding the voting universe, we give ourselves a better chance to get better officials. That's what democracy is supposed to be. That when more people can vote, and particularly communities that have been marginalized or disenfranchised, get their chance to have their vote. It makes a difference. Why did we elect John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock or Mark Kelly in Arizona or John Hickenlooper in Colorado? We elected them because more younger people, more diverse people have been able to vote in those states in the last 15 years. That's what a broader electorate is able to do. Now, we are not really interested in having arguments about whether Hickenlooper is the best candidate in Colorado. We know that he's a mile better than Cory Gardner. We know that. Okay. So yeah. we support the electorate. And then when they get elected, we push them. And so right now we're developing some plans around how we're going to push on the key pieces of legislation that we're invested in, which is around voting, how we're going to push in Congress. And right now, putting together plans on that. I'm going to be talking about that in my lectures on Monday and Tuesday, about kind of moving forward from the Trump presidency, that the most important voting justice legislation that we've seen in decades in this country is going to be up for a vote. It's going to be brought to the floor in Congress. We need to mobilize to support that work. We need to mobilize.
Yeah, common power is about the most common power that all of us have. It's the power of the vote. That is what we're about. And we are about people having their voice to exercise that and to do so however they choose in their given state. And so we're not going to tell people what the best type of Democrat in Colorado is. The Coloradans are going to decide. We're just going to make sure that more of them can make that decision. That's what we're in for. That's what's going to fix this country, is just if more people have the ability to vote and are educated about that vote.
Yeah, I love that, man. I do. It crystallizes the fight for democracy, that democracy is about all people having the chance to voice their opinions. It is the power of the vote, common power. That is so what I'm here for. So Steve, take us home.
it's good to hear. It's chilling. It's good to hear, because that is, like a good tingle up my spine, because that is how it's going to go. Let's fight these issues where they need to be fought, which is in the halls of the legislature and Congress with advocates making a good, legitimate, fact-based case. But to get there, like you say, everybody needs to be in there, in that room, through their vote. That's good to hear. Very exciting.
Yeah. And everybody, I want you to know that we have a list of folks that we are identifying that we will be working against. We don't even know who's running against them, but we will be working against them to defeat them because of the damage they're doing even today. Let's go.